Welcome to Well Told Tales, the Pulp Fiction podcast. Today, our 35th episode, Crush, written by Derek Rutherford, an author who resides in the UK, and read by WellToldTales.com newcomer Eve Berkson. The story does contain some sexuality and graphic violence, so if those aren't your speed, you might want to come back next week. Well, then again, we'll probably have more sex and violence next week as well, so maybe you should find a different podcast. Without further ado, here's our story.
Crush, written by Derek Rutherford, read by Eve Berkson. He grabbed her hand. "Come on," he said, pulling her, wanting to run even as she tried to yank her hand out of his. "Don't," she said. He let go. "I'm sorry. It just feels so natural." "I know," she said. "I feel it too. But we have to be careful." "That's why..." He looked around. There was nobody about. In previous times, they could have done it right there, on the old road with the weeds coming up through the cracks in the concrete, the big sky and the occasional bird their only witnesses. Maybe the road would have been too hard, too painful, but the scrubland that bordered it would have been fine. Well, maybe not fine, but better. Feel the grass beneath their skin, the taste of fresh earth on their fingertips and then their lips. "That's why we've come out here," he said. She pushed a damp tendril of hair away from her face. "How do you know it's safe?" She must have asked him that 100 times since they'd started planning the journey. And the answer had always been the same. "I know," he said. "Just because you read it on the web?" "No." "Just because some people got lucky?" "They weren't lucky. It's the answer, Laura." She stared at him with those brown, almond-shaped eyes. He wanted her so much. He wanted to cradle her head in his hands and gently kiss her eyelids. But he couldn't do that. Not yet. "I don't know," she said. He stepped away from her, held his arms out wide and his head back, and spun around looking up at the heavens. "They're up there," he said, stopping, looking at her. He loved the line of her blue jeans over her hips, the way her cheesecloth shirt flapped in the breeze showing, just for a second, her flat stomach. "No one knows where or why." "Or when," she said. "Especially when." "Agreed. But down there..." He held out a hand as if he was a magician, revealing a great secret. "Down there, they can't touch us." Just thinking about it, he could feel his heartbeat quickening. The ends of his fingers were actually tingling. "You sure?" "I'm sure. And you are too." "I am?" "Why else would you have come all this way?" "I'm not playing hard to get, Tommy. I want this. I want you as much as you want me." He smiled. He had dimples when he smiled. He'd practiced that smile for hours in front of various mirrors. "Give me a kiss," he said. "No tongues," she said. "Mary at college? Her cousin had her tongue bitten off. It only takes a second." "No tongues," he said. "Yet." The entrance to the silo was exactly as it had been described to him, exactly like the web images. It's a hatch," Laura said. Tommy put down his bag. Earlier, when they'd hopped off the truck, back on the highway, that holdall had felt heavy. He'd brought rope, despite what had been written in his confirmation email, and a blanket, torches, and food and drink, too. The truck driver who'd picked them up on the edge of town told them to be careful. "Don't matter how young you are," he said. "Crush'll get you just the same." "We know what we're doing," Tommy said. "Yeah, one of my farmhand's brothers said the same thing. Was holding his baby boy at the time, 3 months old. The driver shook his head and sniffed. "Just bear it in mind, son." "I will," Tommy had said. Once they'd started walking down the old military track, the bag had got lighter by the minute. It had been a long walk under a hot sun. Now they finally made it, he realized he wasn't even aware of the bag's weight. "Look around you," Tommy said, "over there in the distance." She followed his gaze. 150 yards away were what looked like several small and randomly shaped concrete blocks. "What are they?" "That's the main entrance, the old main entrance." "What's this, then?" "This is just an emergency exit. That's why it's so far away from the others. This is the one most people don't know about." "Have you been here before?" He shook his head. "The web, you know. If we were to walk over there, we'd find air vents, an elevator, maybe even the silos themselves." "An elevator?" "Well, the place where an elevator used to be. It'll all be sealed up now." She looked down at the hatch cover and then up again at the distant constructions. "It goes on for miles," he said, loving the way her shirt clung to her breasts. "How long since they used it?" "I don't know. 30 years, maybe." "All this on our doorstep," she said. He saw the wonder in her eyes as she stared at the horizon. It was so long you could see the Earth's curvature. He looked back from the edge of the world to Laura. The sun gave her skin a golden sheen. There was perspiration on her forehead and lips. The moisture looked silver in the midday brightness. He longed to brush his fingers over the fine blonde down on her arms, but even that was dangerous. He stepped close to her, close enough to smell her hot skin. He wanted to circle her waist with his arms, pull himself tight against her back and kiss the sweat from her neck. She turned to him and smiled. For a moment, he thought she was going to hug him, and his face must have reflected his fear. "It's all right," she said. "It's not," he said, both disappointed and relieved. "It's a fucking nightmare." "They'll figure it out." "Who's they?" "The people who built all of this." "You have more faith in them than me." "What else is there to have faith in?" she said. "Come on, help me with this hatch," he said. There was a small spoked wheel on top of the hatch. It rotated surprisingly easily, and then using the same wheel, they lifted the hatch cover. A rush of cold air came up at them. Tommy shivered. He didn't know if it was the cool air or the anticipation. He twisted his mag light into life and shone it into the cavity. A ladder ran down the side of the shaft to a concrete platform about 15 feet down. "It's dark," Laura said beside him, not quite touching him. They'd once played a game where they lay naked in front of each other and touched each other really quickly. It had proved to be more torture than pleasure. "Only temporarily," Tommy said and smiled. It was hard to believe they'd come so far, so close. The steel rungs felt cold beneath his hands. It was a nice cold after the heat up there beneath the cloudless sky. On the platform, he stopped, turned, and held the torch out in front of him. "Jesus Christ," he whispered. And even before he could take in what he was seeing, he started to think that maybe Laura's faith wasn't misplaced after all. Anyone who could build this, who could build this in the middle of nowhere and leave it looking like the middle of nowhere afterwards, could surely do anything. "Laura," he said, "you gotta see this." It reminded him of a cathedral, not in architecture, but in size and scope. The layout was simple. From the platform he was standing on, a steel staircase wound down one side of a cavernous room. Just to the point where his torchlight started to fade, he could make out another platform, and the start of more stairs going down at a right angle to the first. The walls were smooth and white, maybe gray. It was hard to tell in torchlight. There were pipes and cables on the walls running parallel to the steps, handrails too. It was basic, but it was flawless. And in the torchlight, it seemed to go on forever. On one website, a couple of high school lovers had described the dampness and the musty air they had encountered in a mine. Others had described bunkers reeking of kerosene or unknown chemicals or human waste. The air here felt clean and tasteless and pure. "We've got to be safe here," he said. His words sounded full and rich and round in all that emptiness. "We've got to be." Once Laura was on the first platform, he went back up, grabbed the bag and brought it down, climbing one-handed. His body felt stronger than he could ever remember. Then he turned to the ladder again. "Where are you going?" she asked. "To close the cover." "Don't." "It's okay. There's a wheel on the underside, too." "Leave it open." "We can't get locked in." "I don't care. I want it open." There was something in her voice, a tone that suggested that on this, she wouldn't be moved. He felt a sensation that might have even been a form of panic gripping his groin. "It'll be more obvious that someone's in here if it's open than if it's..." "There's no one out here anywhere, Tommy. It's miles from the highway. No one knows where we are." "That truck driver has an idea. The people he'd bought the location information off to, but she didn't know that he'd paid for this. What was the alternative? Someplace everybody knew about? Somewhere smelling of piss and littered with used condoms? She was worth far more than that." "Yeah," she said, "but he was a nice guy." Tommy stood with one foot on the bottom rung of the ladder. The small circle of sky he could see above them felt inconsequential. He realized he was breathing rapidly. "You know what?" he said, trying to slow his breathing, calm his anticipation. "What?" "I'd like to track him down afterwards. Let him know it was all right. I can picture him, you know. Him and his wife, sat across from one another, hands stretched out over an old kitchen table, but not quite touching. You know, maybe the fingertips just touching, talking about the old days, about how it was. I bet before it started, they hadn't, you know, in years, and now they can't. That's the same for everyone." "Except us," he said, giving up on trying to control his anticipation. "Come on, let's go all the way." They climbed down to the second platform, and then followed the staircase even lower to a concrete floor. It felt like they were a mile underground. He lit candles. She told him she couldn't believe he'd remembered candles. He laid a blanket on the hard concrete floor. She picked it up and wrapped it around herself. He poured them each a plastic beaker of wine. "We're not old enough," she said. "For what?" She smiled and sipped the wine. It left a dark smudge on her lips. In daylight, he knew it would be a blood-colored smudge. Down here, it looked black. "Are we really going to?" she asked. "You don't have to." "I want to, but nothing." She put the beaker of wine down next to a candle and held the blanket at her throat with one hand. With the other hand, he saw her undoing buttons beneath the blanket. Her jeans fell to the floor. "Just hold my finger," he said. "Go on. It'll be all right." The massive emptiness around them appeared even greater because the candlelight faded before it reached any walls or even the roof. He held out his left hand, fist clenched, just the fourth finger extended. "It'll be all right," he said again. She reached out, her arm white in the flickering light. Her hand looked so small and fragile next to his. Her fingers slender, her skin almost translucent. He couldn't imagine how such a hand could ever crush anything. She opened her hand over his, thumb below his finger, her fingers above, just an inch of air between them. "Go on." He could hear her breathing rapidly through her nose. In the still air, this close, he could smell the scent of perfume she'd sprayed on that morning, now mixed with body heat. He couldn't help but look up. A tiny circle of clear blue like a strange moon, or an all-seeing eye, looked down upon him. "Maybe we should have shut the..." She closed her fingers around his. He gasped. She breathed out a stream of air through her nostrils. And nothing happened. Except it was bliss. The heat from her hand warmed his finger, ran through his wrist, up his arm. The soft touch of her flesh on his. Her flesh on his! He found himself smiling in the semi-darkness. She looked at him. She was smiling too. Her eyes were glistening. "It's okay," she whispered. There was wonder in her voice. He nodded, and she opened her hand at exactly the same moment he did. And now they held hands, running fingers and palms and thumbs over each other, as if replicating two hands washing. "I can't believe it," she said. He raised his other hand, and she reached out for it, and then they were standing face to face, hands clasping each other. He leaned his head forward. She came to meet him. They paused, lips inches apart, eyes looking into each other. He could feel a pulse in his finger where it pressed against her. He'd never known how good simply touching someone else could be. It had been so long, and he'd never touched anyone he'd loved before. Not this type of love. Not someone he'd wanted this badly. She opened her mouth slightly. Her tongue flicked against her upper lip, and then her teeth bit down gently on the lower. He leaned forward and kissed her. Paused with their lips just touching. It was the same kiss had been up there, below the sky. But now their hands were touching. Her breasts were pressed up against his chest. Now she was letting go of his hands, wrapping her arms around him, pulling him close. He could feel her tongue. He touched it with his tongue. And suddenly he could hold back no more. His arms went around her, and he held her so tightly. He thought he might crush her without help from above. He kissed her. She kissed him. And still, nothing happened. She pulled the cheesecloth shirt over her head without undoing any more buttons. He tore at his belt buckle. By the time he'd got his trainers off and his jeans down, she was standing naked before him. "Laura," he said, but then words failed him. He'd seen her naked before. But he'd never seen her naked moments before he was going to make love to her. She came to him again, running her hands over his chest, his stomach, tracing the lines of his muscles. He pulled her close again. He never wanted not to be pressed up against her. His fingertips found the hollow at the base of her spine. He kissed her shoulders, her neck. She reached lower and closed her hand around him, breath caught in his throat. "Make love to me," she said. She lowered herself onto the blanket, still holding him. He kissed her deeply, unaware now that there was any other way. She guided him inside her, and they both made a sound that was a half moan, half laugh, and he said, "My God," and she smiled up at him and told him she loved him. He wanted it to last forever, but it had been something he dreamed of for too long. He tried to think of her up there, walking along beneath the big sky, on the back of the truck fully dressed, back at college, irritable while trying to complete an essay, while he lounged on her bed. But it was impossible. She was pressing up against him, wrapping her legs around him, pulling him deeper, moving with him, perfectly in rhythm with him. He looked down at her. She was the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen. Her eyes were wet and wide and shining with happiness. Her breasts moved as she moved, and the sight almost pushed him over the edge. "Laura." Now her eyes were closed. She was moaning, too. She was biting her lower lip. He could still see the wine smudge there. Or was it blood? He felt her legs grip him harder. He tried to hold on for a few more seconds. If they could come together. "Laura," he said again. Now her eyes were wide open, looking at him with so much love that he couldn't hold back any longer. "I'm going to..." He felt his orgasm explode within her. His whole body jerked, and his heart felt like it was trying to hammer his way out of his chest. She clenched her thighs around him. He felt himself shudder one more time. The best moment. The best feeling of his entire life. He opened his eyes, not even realizing he'd closed them. "Laura," he said. But she was looking up at him, and it was terror, not love, in her eyes. "I'm sorry," she said. "Laura, what is it?" But he knew what it was. Her legs were squeezing him, pressing him tighter and tighter. She was fighting against it. She'd bitten right through her lower lip. Her right hand jerked outwards, seeking leverage against something, anything. She knocked over a candle. And her legs squeezed his waist so hard that he felt something inside start to scream. "Tommy!" He fought against it, his own arms pressed against the floor, his body writhed, trying to escape from her grip. No, it wasn't her grip. It was something else. Something no one understood. Crush. "I can't stop it, Tommy." He could taste the blood in his mouth now. It felt as if his insides were being slowly squeezed up through his throat. And even as the thought came, he found his hands on her throat. It was the only way to stop her. There wasn't even time to think. He pushed his thumbs deep into her windpipe. Her eyes bulged. "Laura," he cried. Something cracked in his hips. He screamed and pressed harder. She looked up at him with those brown almond-shaped eyes, and there was something in them that broke his heart as surely as her legs were breaking his hips. Afterwards, a long time afterwards, after tears so hard they were like tiny slivers of his heart being ejected one by one, he started to feel the real pain. Her legs were locked so tightly around him that he couldn't prise himself free. Whatever damage she'd done to him, the agony was simply too intense for him to work himself loose. It felt as if shards of bone had pierced his liver or kidneys or maybe his bowel. He didn't know what was down there. All he knew was he could taste blood. He could spit blood, and it felt like sharp teeth were inside him, working their way out. Panic came. He screamed and yelled, and his noise carried with it a light spray of internal blood. The screams bounced back at him from the unseen walls like laughter. He wept some more. He started to shiver, and when the shivers became shudders, they started to hurt so much he willed himself to be still. Somehow, he managed to roll over. Something grated inside, and this time, when he screamed, the amount of blood caused him to cough and choke. When he regained his breath, he saw how close her face was to his. Her already bloated and discolored face, with globules of blood all over it, like an awful disease. Above him, 50 feet, possibly 100 feet, but it may well have been 100 miles, he could see a tiny disk of darkening blue, all that remained of the big sky. But it had been enough.
And that's our story. Gives a whole new meaning to the marketing slogan, "Reach out and touch someone," doesn't it? We're back next week with the third and final installment of our excerpt of Paul D'Ambrosio's novel, Cold Rolled Dead. Then we're back in 2 weeks with another short story. We've also got something very awesome in the works for everybody. We'll probably have an announcement about that within the next week or two. It will be pretty awesome. Leave it at that for now. We always love to hear feedback, so feel free to leave a comment on this story or any others at welltoldtales.com. As always, we thank everybody for listening, and I'd like to give a very special thank you to the folks who have made a small donation recently to help us pay our writers. As you probably know, we freely distribute our files on a Creative Commons license, so feel free to share them with a friend. Catch you next time.